Yo.
It's like a homecoming, which Missouri invented.
That's exactly right. So Missouri had their homecoming, and today we'll play against Mississippi, and it will be the feature game in our area today and see if the Tigers can continue their role and continue to put the Wyoming opening game in the deep rearview mirror and perhaps continue on to have a season where maybe bowl eligibility isn't there, but they have the opportunity to stay in the SEC East race, and we'll see what happens as the Missouri Tigers trying to overcome a little adversity from last week when they won their game and continue on against a Mississippi team that's sort of been up and down and unpredictable as well. On the show today, we will visit with Chris Giovino, the sideline reporter and sometime analyst for the Missouri Tigers as well, and also Sherwood Taylor, who coached at K-State, long time in the coaching industry and has a little bit of a coaching tree. His son, Zach Taylor, is the coach of the Cincinnati Bengals and one-time Big 12 Player of the Year at Nebraska. And another of his sons is the Eagles quarterback coach. So,
and he's an Oklahoma football player.
Yes.
That's the main thing we got to say. Danny, you talk about Missouri at home. Okay, and you talk about an unusual situation here as we sit in studio in Kansas City getting ready for a full 2 hours of college football game day. How about this? The Tigers are at home. KU and K-State are not. Nebraska's not. Iowa State's not. Colorado's not. Oklahoma's not. And Oklahoma State's not. How about that? That's a pretty big circle of listeners that we have, and there's only one team playing a home game. It's the Missouri Tigers.
And, of course, one other note from college football today is that Kansas City is welcoming back the Northwest Missouri State Pitt State game today.
In Arrowhead.
At Arrowhead, something that they had for a few years and now comes back as well, and both teams are playing good football. So a lot to dive into, but we come to this point in the college football season for the Sunflower State teams, and they both have time to reflect and reboot, in fact. And in the case of Kansas, there is a reboot aspect to it because they are going to start up anew next week with a new offensive coordinator after the move is made by Les Miles last week. And they go to the young analytics man in the spot of offensive coordinator. It comes after a really disappointing loss against TCU, and then when many people think the decision was made to change the offensive coordinator, but they were going to wait for the bye week. That's at least some people's narrative as far as it is concerned. And then a game against Oklahoma that was about what you'd expect, but not any kind of conflagration as far as a disaster is concerned for Kansas. They were competitive for about 20 minutes in the game, and then at the end sort of circled the wagons and ended up losing by 22 points when they were a 35-point favorite. So a time for assessment for the Kansas Jayhawks in a season that I would say probably sits right there at a C. They're kind of average. It hasn't been something that has been, you know, oh my God, Les Miles doesn't know what he's doing, but it hasn't been even particularly encouraging either. Sort of right on the fence right now with the rest of the season maybe to determine how this season is to be graded.
And maybe that is an improvement, Danny, because it's not a disaster. And it looked like it might have been a disaster. Even in week one, it was somewhat competitive. Week two, they lose to Coastal Carolina. And now you're saying, are we repeating the same thing we've seen with other coaches early in their career? And are we repeating the same seasons we've seen year after year where we lose that FCS-type game or a low-level FBS team, and now we got to fight through the Big 12 as well? That win against Boston College was so cleansing, ending it with a 48-game road losing streak against FBS opponents. That was big. They showed some things that they could get done there. It might have led to some of the decision-making that's now, I think his name's Dierman, is the coach at Bethel who came, played at Bethel, coached at Bethel, and came up as an analyst for KU and is now the offensive coordinator. And when he got rid of Les Koenig, who was not his first pick as the offensive coordinator, by the way, he maybe doubled down on what you're saying, Danny. If you're on the fence right now, if that's what your evaluation is in KU football so far this year, he really has made it more of a double or nothing by saying, we're making a change right now. So then you start focusing on, hey, this is an area of improvement or this is an area of weakness. And when a coach does that, it throws up a lot of red flags normally. This is a unique situation because Les Koenig has not been a dominant offensive coordinator. He's just been one of the guys that's been around in the industry. And now you got a young guy who's really good at the RPO, has a whole different level of energy, seems to be much closer to the players, Danny. They're very excited about seeing him take over. He has a level of confidence, concentration. And the timing of this, I think, needs to be thought about. A lot of people are saying, well, oh, Kansas didn't play that bad against Oklahoma. Why would you run the offensive coordinator out? And I think that that shows something good about Les Miles, is he had to make the decision now, not because Oklahoma was a disaster and an overreaction situation. It makes me feel better that it's not an overreaction, that this is the time to do it, because they got 2 weeks before they play their next game. Their next game's against Texas on the road. Unlikely to get a read on anything that's going on you go on the road against Texas. Everything you do is a positive. It's something that maybe you shock them a little bit and you have another good game like you did against Oklahoma, and then your season kicks into gear. So you basically have 3 weeks before this offense has to work, because that's when you come back home and play Texas Tech and K-State. So now is the time, if you're going to make a move like this and you think it's an improvement for the Jayhawks. I don't think it's a panic move. It's unusual. It'll be interesting to see, because now you got a youngster with a ton of confidence who just believes, basically he's writing books about and teaching about RPOs and saying, this is the way. Hey, I learned it from Gus Malzahn at Auburn. Watch out, because Kansas, Carter Stanley likes playing this style. We thought that he had a lot of influence. Who knows how much? Maybe he was in there calling the plays against Boston College. You never know, Danny, how much influence he had. And they seem to think that that was a change. We talked about it in our evaluation, that they opened things up more, gave themselves more room. Now, though, they don't have Khalil Herbert. They're with one running back, with Puka as being a star. But still, he responded well against Oklahoma. Maybe they can get some things going. So we'll see with KU. Right now, it's definitely not a disaster, which gives you some hope that maybe you can win a conference game or two. It'll be a lot of fun to see how the offense changes. It'll be a lot of fun to see how this coach reacts. Now, we won't see his face, but with this miles to go behind the scenes, we might get a read. I mean, my read on the replacement is much about the miles to go show. I was able to see how he approached things and the confidence level he has, the connection with the players. I wouldn't be able to say that here today, Danny, with any. I wouldn't have never said it except for I saw it in play. How will his confidence hold up when he has all the pressure in the world? Fans start tweeting, he's in over his head, he's a Bethel guy, he's not at this level, he's not calling plays well. If things don't go well, how's he going to handle all the pressure and the spotlight? And what are the players going to do? Because we've talked about this a lot. You and I have do some podcasting there. On where do we show those podcasts?
That'd be DannyKlingscale.com.
I'm DannyKlingscale.com early in the week. And, Danny, we talk about the NFL. And we've seen a coordinator run out, Coach Sutton, run out as a defensive coordinator, and we've talked a lot about this. When that happens, you bring on the new guy and you just love everything about him until proven otherwise. I mean, Spagnuolo was a savior to the players. I mean, we don't have to have that complicated defense anymore. Chiefs are so excited. The players so excited. Well, we're going to get that first indication from the KU players that we like the young guy. We like the newness. We like his decisiveness, his confidence, his swagger, his accountability. But if it doesn't work early, what will the players do? How will their attitudes be? It changes fast. Like, wait a second, he's never called a play in Division I ever. What are we doing here? So there's going to be a lot to watch at that Texas Tech game. It is a giant game, a couple of weeks out, right? But KU hosting Texas Tech is a giant game, and I think Les Miles just made it a bigger game by what he's done by changing the offensive coordinator in midseason.
So Brent Dearman comes aboard, and he's talked about the fact that he could have had a little bit of a comfort level and stayed as a head coach and maybe tried to climb the ladder that way, instead tried to go in a different direction and challenge himself. And it's paid off rather quickly for him as now the offensive coordinator.
He's very impressive at first blush.
At the University of Kansas. For Kansas State, the reassessment and reboot is really one that probably is timely right now. They had a bye after they won three games, and it looked like the world was their oyster. And now they get another bye just two games later after two, well, you just can't say anything but miserable performances, particularly on offense. They didn't get a bunch of points run up on them, but they were dominated in both games. The games were borderline non-competitive. And you couldn't really have two more glaring differences than the first three games, including one against FCS competition, FBS competition.
SEC on the road.
In Mississippi State. And, you know, so a viable game. Nichols is a good team in their category as well. And everything was really smooth. And the style of play and the physicality and the precision play of the quarterback all seemed to be in place. And then bye week, and then the exact opposite. I mean, the exact opposite. And Chris Klieman and his staff has to be searching for answers, no matter how much they say that the sky is not falling.
Right, because where you are and what you've done yesterday matters. Momentum in a season matters. In real life, time matters. There's 24 hours in a day, even if you only practice football for two or four, or you know, however long, six or eight, whatever you spend. When you take a week off and you don't win, that is a week of your life from the last time you won. So when they beat Mississippi State and had a week off, everyone was happy. We're doing the show here. K-State's ranked 22nd in the nation, ready to start Big 12 conference play on the road at Oklahoma State. And you could be happy, but if you lose the OSU game, now you start saying, well, it's been 2 weeks since we beat Mississippi State. Then you lose the next game, it's been 3 weeks. Now we have an off week, and suddenly the players don't have that confirmation that things are going well, that everything's working. So you got to really pull your bootstraps up. Now, if you want to step back and look at it from a global standpoint and don't think about where we are and you just are getting done with baseball and say, well, I'm ready to start thinking about football. Don't know that person, but if they're out there, K-State's 3-2. And if you would have counted them up, even bowl eligibility season and some good things happening, Danny, with a lot of home games left and a road game at KU in the state of Kansas, you could say K-State's fine. They're 3-2. You know, which game did they win? Did they beat Baylor at home or did they beat Oklahoma State on the road? Not many people would ask, did they beat Mississippi State? So they did get that win. It's a big factor right now that they can say they're 3-2. But, yeah, you've got to reevaluate everything right now because K-State football early in the season was built on some very sound defense and changing things up, winning third down in a big, big way. And then on the offensive side, passing when they wanted to, with a high completion percentage, very good precision in the passing game, and accurate throwing by Skylar Thompson, great audibilization at the line of scrimmage. And it all came about because they could run the ball one, and mostly they can convert on third down. So when it became 3rd and 2, 3rd and 4, K-State would convert, and when they're on defense, they would stop the team. I think third down conversion is a big part of big-time football all the way to the NFL. But they were living in almost a fantasy land. It was working all the time. Now, at North Dakota State, not every coach that's at K-State now was at North Dakota State, so it's unfair to just act like that whole group of coaches just walked in from there. But Coach Messingham, Courtney Messingham, the offensive coordinator, has been there recently at North Dakota State. He came from there, and head coach Chris Klieman. You know, that's what they were so good at. They didn't dominate you with 12-yard plays every down like Oklahoma tries to overwhelm people. They did it by getting a good first down play, a solid second down play. And, oh, guess what? It's 3rd and 3, and they convert. K-State looked the same way. But when that didn't happen against Oklahoma State, they couldn't sequence those three downs. Their offense really struggled. And then if you look at Oklahoma State, Danny, actually it was the second game in a row that K-State didn't gain 300 yards of total offense. They didn't gain 300 yards against Mississippi State. It was such a kind of SEC battle. There were turnovers, craziness, toughness, all the things that you love to watch. It wasn't about the stats. But at the end of the game, they didn't have 300 yards of total offense. And you go to the second game in a row at Oklahoma State, and suddenly you're starting to look about your offense. And then against OSU, you go against an NFL type of guy in Chuba Hubbard. He goes for 296 yards, and you start asking yourself the question, how much of it's Chuba and how much of it is K-State being sound in their fits down after down? Missouri had a bad day, a couple plays in a row, but Missouri didn't get their fits down appropriately, and they lost to Wyoming, and they got run all over. And look at where they are right now, Danny, stuffing the run. So it is not just about the athletes. It is about getting into the system and not making mistakes and getting your fits on the run. What does that mean? A safety sometimes lined up 12 yards off the ball might have the outside, the tight end, run stop responsibility. Does that make sense? When the ball snapped, they are supposed to be there to make the tackle. It's not just the linebackers or the front six or seven. It is getting your fits. Missouri cleaned it up and now is a very good defense. K-State is actually slipping a little bit. I thought it was Chuba a lot and a little bit of K-State. But then against Baylor, same stuff happened at a critical point in the game. We were trying to win at the end, and Baylor was able to run a quarterback run in for a touchdown, and they also were able to get that 42-yard run. Those two plays really separated in what, by scoreboard at least, was an opportunity for K-State in a close game. So now you look around and say, K-State's still winning third down well, but they're down after down, not stopping the run. They've got some bad fits. Can they clean that up in 2 weeks? And then on offense, what are they going to do? What are they going to do? And it's a there's no easy answer right now because everyone looks at the receiving core, but it's not just the receiving core, Danny. It's just as much about establishing the running game, having that line come off and move people. And right now, we got a couple of games to watch today. There are great games today on
TV. Yes, there are.
But there are a couple of great games to put the spotlight on what do we think of K-State. Okay? And this is for me, and I think a lot of people. You want to know where K-State is, it's going to be hard to know. And they can improve and be different in 2 weeks. They're reevaluating too right now, Danny. But at 11 o'clock today, Mississippi State's at Tennessee. Okay? How good is Mississippi State? It's not easy when you go on the road. They're not a dominant offensive team. But Tennessee's a team that they could beat. How does that play out? It'll give you a hint about who K-State beat. Okay? Then Baylor's at home against Texas Tech. A Texas Tech team that does have a quarterback who's gaining confidence, who's a high-flying offensive unit that really jumped on Oklahoma State and was the better team for 2.5 quarters by far. Just because it's at Baylor doesn't mean Texas Tech's not going to be a hard out. I happen to like Baylor's team. I happen to think they're good. But I can't keep sitting here and reconciling K-State's losses by how good every opponent is. Not all of the Big 12 is going to be so good that you go, well, darn, Chuba Hubbard's too good at OSU. Oh, man, that Baylor front is so tough that it's hard to establish the running game. Right now, I'm sitting there with those statements, at least in my mind. The Baylor front wall is really good. Their middle linebacker, Clay Johnson's their best guy, and their nose guard is first team all Big 12 until I see the Texas and Oklahoma guys go at it today. I'm going to watch them a little closer, but he might be. And they got a first-team all-Big 12 from last year, defensive tackle as well. So, you know, it was hard to move Baylor. They're fast. They're good. But if they don't beat Texas Tech today, then you got to be a little careful about how much praise you're giving people. So Baylor and Mississippi State, to me, Danny, are real games to watch. For me to say, what do I think about K-State's performance against them? How much was it those opponents, and how much was it K-State?
The other part, when on the surface, if you're viewing college football and football in general, it would seem that putting your eggs in the basket of converting at a high percentage on third down doesn't strike me as being the best plan. I mean, even 45%, 40 to 45% is pretty good conversion rate on third down. If you're going to try to go down the field and have four of those on a drive, odds are you're not going to get them all. And so what about that aspect of it and the thought that, you know, third and three, when you've got better personnel, like what you did at North Dakota State, it's not a hard down. In Big 12 football, that's a throwing down most of the time, to be honest. So you just wonder if the prescription was the right one. Not necessarily the execution, but the prescription of leaning on third down conversion.
Yeah, it's an interesting question, and it gets back into when people want to start asking, well, what, is there a difference between FCS and FBS? And there's really not in its coaching. You know, yeah, the athletes change, but the strategies don't. And they have a long proven record, Danny, of playing good defense in this modern style of football is keeping the ball. And we're not going to go into a lot of Chiefs stuff here, but if you go listen to our podcast, I'll talk a lot about the best defense against Patrick Mahomes as your team keeping the football. So it's about controlling the football, creating physicality. K-State's got a veteran offensive line. And they look so good at the beginning, Danny, and they beat up on Mississippi State. So we can't say the formula doesn't work, but you're right. It's unusual. It's fitting into a small window. But it is consistent, and it's something that I really like about Coach Chris Klieman. He's doing what worked, what he knows works. Won national championships at North Dakota State, and they didn't always have the best athletes. They may have had the fourth best athletes in the country and still were able to win those big games with everybody coming at them like they were Alabama. I mean, everyone played their best against them with energy and a lot of adrenaline. They're a little concerned. But you get back to K-State. K-State football under Chris Klieman is like taking a baton from Bill Snyder, and that's good. I mean, if he would have said, we're going to play a style of football like Texas Tech, and suddenly not have the athletes or the training or the understanding at all, that would be more of a risk. Really what he's done is played his style because it's his style, but I like that it happens to not be much different than what Bill Snyder's gotten done. What's the reconciling item, Danny? I'm gonna look at the whole world a different way for you. What's the reconciling item between K-State winning one of their last three games and not winning the other two? We can split a bunch of hairs because you can talk about, well, they don't have as good of athletes. Well, it's the same type of players that Bill Snyder had. It's the same physicality of the offensive line. They don't have the running backs, but James Gilbert seems to be doing a nice job at running back. Jordan Brown, the North Carolina transfer, is hurt. Maybe that's affected K-State. I don't know. But the difference between the Mississippi State game, kickoff return for a touchdown. So Bill Snyder football was, hey, we may not be as athletic as you down after down with all 22 guys who play the game, but our quarterback's going to play a smart game, get us into the right plays. We're going to convert, and we're going to play great on special teams, and let's just see how it all turns out. And last year, it was a 5-7 season that could have easily been three more wins. And the other years, the year before, pretty darn successful, and even to being really successful. And that's not just, oh, Colin Klein, okay? It happened under Jake Waters. It happened under Jesse Ertz, Danny. Don't tell me it was just Colin Klein and that was 8 years ago or any of that stuff. It happened under Bill Snyder. Last year was kind of an aberration where it didn't work so well. So before we sit there and go what we think, it's kind of the same kind of fence thing that K-State is on. Where are they with this season? And you really have got to say, let's see what happens going forward. But I think the big special teams play made the Mississippi State game look better. But doing things the way Bill Snyder did and the way Coach Klieman wants to and the players believing in that kind of philosophy, that may work. That may work. K-State's got a lot of home games left, and they're going to have to win their share of close ones. I brag up Baylor a lot. I want to mention their front wall again. Bravion Roy, nose guard. James Lynch, first-team All-Big 12 last year. And James Lockhart, a big-time transfer to Texas A&M. That's your three front guys. So I like Baylor a lot. But you know what Baylor's done? They've won two fairly close games. They beat Iowa State in a close game, and K-State in what is a competitive game on the road, they've won. Who's going to win their close games is really going to redefine who's good and not in what I think is a pretty even Big 12 conference. That said, K-State's got to start winning their share of close ones. If that happens, they'll be fine. If they don't, you come up a little bit short, keep bragging on the opponent, and you're not going to be happy where you are. So an important 2 weeks for K-State and an important 2 weeks for KU, and really three for KU, because it'll be fun to see what they do against Texas and how they fight and all of that, but it really starts Texas Tech at home a few weeks from now.
Skylar Thompson was very efficient in the first three games, but they haven't really even tried to lean that much on the throwing game. I mean, you don't not gain 300 yards and have a great day throwing, but his high watermark this year is 218 yards passing. They want to be a run-first team, but if they have a quarterback that they have some confidence in, do you assess that it's possible they will maybe not change radically, but perhaps try to lean on their quarterback a little bit more?
No, I think they'll lean on him. They'll be leaning on him, but it will not be easy for us to see. It's leadership. It's audibilization. You know, being more confident, they may tell him, don't just audibilize in running plays, which you're doing a nice job, but be a little bit more aggressive in the passing downs. But what K-State has done fairly well, Danny, is they've been a decent first down team. What they haven't backed it up with is second down. Their second down plays over the last two games, I don't know the number, but it might be close to 0 yard gains. There's been losses in there, and now suddenly they're not dictating what they need to do. So I think that, you know, they've come out each of their first two Big 12 games actually play action passing, not running. And I think they may just go the other way. I think they may just go, let's go all in. Let's don't respect the Big 12 so much. You know, let's don't get into our head. Let's rely more. Let's just act like it's our offensive line and our running game better pound the ball. And on the first three plays of the game, we're going to run and then decide what we want to do on third down. But you might need to, you know, you can rely on him throwing a little bit more. Right now, K-State is going through something that the Chiefs are going through. All right? Teams think they found the formula. Okay? Is it okay if I talk about the Chiefs on here? I mean, am I boring people with the Chiefs talk?
I don't think the Chiefs can be boring anyone these days. There's too much interest in the Chiefs.
If Tyreek Hill's...
All Chiefs talk is accepted.
Okay. Tyreek Hill's not in the lineup for the Chiefs. He might be this Sunday, but he hadn't been the last couple of weeks, right? And starting with Detroit, whose coach, Patricia, was on staff with Bill Belichick, probably called Bill Belichick and said, what do you think about playing the Chiefs? And he said, in the AFC Championship game, we doubled Tyreek, but we basically played man-to-man and said, can they run man-to-man routes and just hope that they, if we play zone, they will cut us apart. So without Tyreek Hill and with that knowledge, guess what Detroit did? They played man-to-man against the Chiefs. The Colts, who never play man-to-man, the least man-to-man of any team in the league, comes out and plays man-to-man against the Chiefs because they go, we're going to pick our poison, and we think we found something here without Tyreek to burn us and with Mecole Hardman not ready to, you know, dominate out there as a rookie. Let's just see if we have people around Kelce, get the safety near him, play man-to-man, and let's see if Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid have enough offense just against man-to-man to hurt us. And it didn't happen. The Chiefs' offense scored the least points. They weren't as good in offense against Detroit. So K-State's now sitting there, and Oklahoma State came in. K-State was undefeated, and they say, we play this 3-3-5. It's the first time that K-State's players have played against 3-3-5 except for against Iowa State. So there's a little bit of a question, like, how are we going to attack this? And Oklahoma State got K-State on their heels. And then anytime they thought K-State might pass, what do they do? Jump into man-to-man and say, we're going to dare your guys to beat us man-to-man. So K-State now is not seeing zone. And they have to prove that they can win the man-to-man battle. And then guess what everyone's saying right now? Oh, the receiving corps for K-State, they can't beat man-to-man. You know, acting like it's over. It's not over. You just got to rework and prove that you can run man-to-man routes. You can do rub routes. You can do some things, Danny. And once you get them a little concerned that you can beat man, not always just deep, just beat man on third down and find the openings, get K-State's players used to that mentality, then they'll play you more straight. You'll see more zone. And, oh, by the way, not every team in the Big 12 is going to play 3-3-5. It happened that K-State played two in a row, and they thought they found K-State's formula. So just like the Chiefs have to work really hard this week to find what are they going to do if the defense this week against the Texans is the same as the last couple, and K-State's got to find the same thing. If you can't beat it, it's like a baseball player that comes up to the majors, and you're a good hitter, and you get hits, and suddenly they say, oh, you don't like the curveball on a 2-0 count or whatever, and they start throwing you that curveball until you hit it. Both the Chiefs and K-State have got to find a way to beat what everyone thinks is the formula to stop their whole offense.
That's a look at the Sunflower State team on this day when it'd be a nice day to play some college football. It's a beautiful day today. But
drive to Columbia, Missouri, if you're around here.
Yeah, and the Tigers have, this is a day where you get a 6 o'clock kick. You got a lot of time to decide. Good weather. Tigers haven't been drawing great by the standards they want to. Maybe today for an evening game, they get that as well. There are four Big 12 teams that have the day off today, three Big 12 games. We'll talk about those a little bit later on, and we'll talk about the Missouri Tigers coming up next with Chris Gervino. We always like to visit with Chris. Who doesn't? Nicest guy in America, maybe.
Well, Danny,
I've done
a lot of, what do you call them, shows or games, events. He and I worked together when we had arena football. He was the play-by-play guy. I was a color analyst. We traveled all over the country together. So everyone likes talking to Chris Gervino because he's such a nice guy. And he seems like Mr. Mizzou, right, because he's been there forever. He's still on, what, the NBC station in Columbia.
Never left.
He's there doing sports at night, and he's also doing a great service because Mizzou, with their students, they really do a good job of training students at Mizzou, and Chris Gervino is the perfect guy to help them give chances on air and around the things that are going on with the Tigers and his television station. So he is such a great guy. But Danny's even more than that to me. He's truly a friend. He's got to know my family. I got to know his family by traveling all over the country. His brothers are so much fun. One was in Chicago, one in Philadelphia. But today, I just gave you the scenario. There's not much football around the Midwest here in our area, but there's a fun one tonight. Ole Miss, a legitimate opponent, but an underdog to the Tigers. No more fun in a game like this, Danny, where you're a little bit nervous, but you're pretty confident that the Tigers are going to win. That's a fun afternoon to drink and get ready for a game, isn't it?
I would think so. Okay. Tigers just under a 2-touchdown favorite. Ole Miss, a young team that likes to lean on its running game. Missouri has cleaned up the run fits, as Stan noted. We'll talk to Chris Gervino next about the Missouri Tigers right here on College Football Game Day. Welcome back to College Football Game Day on Sports Radio 810 WHB. It is a Saturday without football in the state of Kansas, but Missouri, Columbia, Missouri, has themselves a ball game this evening and giving us information about that, not only now, but during the game, is Chris Gervino. Chris, we always enjoy having you on the program, and today Missouri is in the focus, and maybe that's a good thing here, and as we broadcast from Kansas City, because I think it is absolutely true that in some form, when Big 12 football is being played by our local teams, Missouri sometimes can be a shade out of the spotlight compared to what it used to be when they were in the Big 12.
Right. Well, I suppose that makes sense, especially with Kansas and Kansas State and the Big 12. So the Tigers are maybe outnumbered a bit, 2-1 there. But Mizzou with the spotlight. And I think it'll be a good game. Ole Miss is a decent team, and one that had modest expectations, I think, for many of us outside the program there. But you look at them 3-3, and they've two conference wins, albeit over Arkansas and Vanderbilt, but they were competitive with Alabama for a half, and their two non-conference losses were to Cal and Memphis, who Cal's been ranked, and Memphis is probably one of the best non-Power 5 schools. So I think it's a decent team. They run for about 300 yards a game. I think Missouri on homecoming, albeit a 12-point favorite, we'll have a bit of a test today, certainly.
Okay, Chris, you mentioned homecoming. It's a tradition at Mizzou. Homecoming was invented there. And you also have seen homecoming around the country. Is there a difference, in your opinion, between the celebration and style and what happens, or prestige, honor at Mizzou with homecoming? Or does it just everybody's been doing it for so long that homecoming's fun, a lot of people are able to come back to university, but it's not much different than every place else?
You know, it's a good question on homecoming, because Missouri does take it, maybe seriously is not the best word, but it's important here. I do believe that. And certainly other places have it. Obviously, I'm around this one on a more consistent basis. And yet, with football weekends, it's just kind of another busy weekend in my life in terms of the work, and that's not a complaint. I enjoy it, but it's just I don't get out and about and enjoy it. But I do know that year after year we have so many people come back, even from all the way back 30 years plus when I was in school, and let alone around town. There are just so many gatherings and events. So I would say, and I realize I'm biased because this is where I've been my whole adult and professional life, but it is a big deal here. They do make a big deal of it. People look forward to it. There are so many different events and gatherings. At the TV station where I work, there are just people parading through there all day long Friday, some from just the spring that graduated, others from decades ago. So I think homecoming is important probably everywhere, some places more than others. But yeah, I would put this on a serious list, just knowing how Missouri fans and alums really get into it and come back by the waves every year.
Well, generally, you try to schedule a homecoming game that you feel like you can win. Back in the day, way back in the day, Kansas State would be the homecoming game for a lot of teams.
Yeah, Kansas, I played in a lot of those games.
Kansas is in that category now, and so you mentioned the modest expectations for Ole Miss. They don't select these games. You don't select Georgia at home for your homecoming game. So Ole Miss gets the treatment this time around. And Ole Miss is a bit of a difficult team to judge because you mentioned Cal was ranked. Memphis is ranked now, and they're undefeated. And Alabama just slaughters people, and Mississippi was pretty competitive with them.
Mississippi State's better than them.
And you can only beat who you play, so they played and beat Vanderbilt and Arkansas. But they lost their first-string quarterback. They run the ball a lot, but they don't throw it enough so that their offense barely cracks the top 100. So it is a difficult team to judge. They could be a little bit better than we think.
I think that's true, and I think that's kind of the feeling and approach I've taken. And obviously, as you guys know, you prepare for a game, you really dive into the numbers and pay a lot more attention, obviously, to a school than you had been to this point in the season. I see them a little bit on TV, and, first, to your point about homecoming, you're right. Missouri, the last 3 years, has played a non-conference opponent homecoming. Idaho, Memphis, and Middle Tennessee State have been the last three homecoming opponents for Missouri, but this is a conference team. And, of course, that really has more to do with time of year. Missouri likes to play its homecoming game. Obviously, it has to be a home game in mid to late October. And the SEC, of course, schedules a little differently. They actually give you a couple of conference games usually in September. So that's a bit of a delicate juggling act there, too. But your point about Ole Miss, they run for, they're averaging 300 yards a game rushing, and that's, you know, through three SEC games. And I realize they've played Arkansas and Vanderbilt, probably the bottom two in the league, the two teams they've beaten, but they also ran quite effectively against Alabama, even in the loss, and then Memphis and Cal are pretty good teams. So, you know, this is a team that's really been tested so far, 3-3. And again, I think just in my mind, as I look at them and get ready for this game, I think they're probably a little better than I thought they might be, you know, coming into the season. And you mentioned, Danny, they don't throw very much, and they're kind of one-dimensional, but in some ways for them it might be good because it's what they do, it's what they've become good at. The question is, can Missouri stop the run? Missouri's been really good defensively against the run this season. A huge absence will be Cale Garrett, the starting middle linebacker, is done for the year. So we'll see how the other 10 guys, or 11 guys in this case, will do as his replacement is in there. So, but that's going to be the key to the game, clearly, I think, is Missouri's ability to stop Ole Miss with the football, where the Rebels like to run.
Chris Trevino is our guest, Missouri Tiger Network. Tonight's game against Ole Miss, and he mentioned something, Chris, you mentioned about it might be better when you have a true freshman quarterback like Plumlee, who wasn't the starter at the beginning of the year, and so much pressure being on the road. It's almost better, guys, when you just have to go in and run. He's averaging 6.5 yards a carry. He only completes 50% of his passes, but they're not trying to complete passes and put a lot of pressure on him. And, Chris, I remember earlier this year against South Carolina, they had a freshman quarterback, and, you know, they put the ball in his hands, and he put it in Missouri's hands a couple of times and was the difference in the game. So, you know, I think that was overwhelming for the guy and it was a big difference maker. Today, Mississippi becomes a little bit more of a struggle to beat because I think they're going to be so committed in what they do. Now, you might stuff them and shut them out and be an easy win, but I do think as a quarterback, it'll be easier for them to play that way. Now, speaking of quarterbacks, I'm interested in a couple things from you, Chris. You saw Drew Locke come from Kansas City, basically, and get thrown in the fire early and grow up to be a grown man, an NFL early draft choice type of player, now with the Denver Broncos unfortunately injured. You saw that all unfold the last few years, and now you see a transfer quarterback, a big-time guy from Clemson. Just your thoughts on how Kelly Bryant has played, how he's played recently. Is he in a little bit of a slump? Is it against SEC opponents? Your take on Kelly Bryant, and then when you get done with that, I really need to know a little bit about Taylor Powell. Because we got scared last week with Kelly Bryant getting injured. It's great to see that he's going to be back today. But if he weren't able to quarterback for whatever reason, what does Missouri have in a backup in Taylor Powell? So kind of go to the quarterback and what you think about that position right now as you get ready for Mississippi today.
Sure. Good questions. You know, I think Kelly is really settling in here at Missouri and still want to see, you know, this season unfold and what he does now, especially as the Tigers get into SEC play, which, of course, for Missouri is really just starting up, South Carolina victory aside. But, you know, he's from day one when he got here, when I first met him and saw him with the team, he really brought instant credibility, which I think is a big thing. And that's something Missouri would not have had if they didn't land him as a transfer, simply because Drew Locke had been a four-year starter now in the NFL. And Taylor Powell, who I'll elaborate on in a minute, just really unproven. I mean, his teammates certainly know him and like him, and I'm sure think highly of him. But when you get the kid coming in from Clemson, who was 16-2 there as a starter and had gotten to the college football playoffs, but, you know, that's instant credibility. And I think, you know, his numbers are solid. I think hopefully even for him and the team they'll get better. But he's really a leader of the team. 11 touchdown passes, 3 interceptions, completing 65% of his passes for 1,200 yards. He's run for about 125 yards. So, you know, very decent, solid numbers. And what he's shown me is watching him, I mentioned this last week, his ability to, you know, create something out of nothing. In other words, when the pocket's collapsing around him, his ability to escape, get out, and extend the plays has really been something that's caught my eye, you know, more so than I would watch him from afar from Clemson. He's got a great ability to keep the play alive and make something positive happen. But I think hopefully the best for him is still to come with Missouri as he keeps clicking with the Tigers in this offense. And I think, you know, you almost look for spectacular things because he was such a winning, solid quarterback at Clemson. But then you pay attention, you dig in the numbers, you realize he is putting together a pretty solid year. You know, he's doing just fine. And most importantly, leading them to 4 wins in 5 games. None of us have seen him play extensively, and I think that's to your point, your question. You know, how good is he? A very calm kid, very cool, collected. Again, when I'm around Jim, when we're around Jim, I think the media most would tell you he's a quiet guy, very pleasant, gives you good, thoughtful answers the few times we've talked to him. So, you know, he may be a little more animated, so to speak, around his teammates and away from the field of the media, but just kind of gives you that quarterback feeling, which I think is a good thing, that he's kind of in command, in control, seems a relatively unflappable just as a guy, as a young guy in that position. But I think fair to say the jury's still out, and Missouri doesn't want to find out too soon or, you know, surprisingly how he is, because they really are all in with Kelly Bryant as the starter for this 1 year they have him.
The mantra always is next man up in any situation in football. We hear it from Andy Reid all the time, and obviously we hear it from most football coaches, if not all. But and you can say all the right things, but they're losing quite a player, are the Tigers, in Cale Garrett. He's been scoring touchdowns. He's been playing at a frenetic level, and he's likely gone for the season with a pectoral injury. Just talk about that loss.
Well, that's a huge loss, Danny. I mean, I think and thought last year he was their best player. I mean, he was their best player, most valuable player. He made 100 tackles on the team, was in there game in, game out, down in, down out. Just leader of the team, really. Clearly the defensive leader. And we talk about Kelly Bryant's one of the captains for the offense. Cale Garrett's the defensive captain. And, you know, 100-plus tackles last year. He had 43 tackles in 5 games this year, 3 interceptions, a fumble recovery, 3 touchdowns. I mean, it's incredible. Your middle linebacker scored 3 touchdowns. Some of the offensive guys are jealous. Wish they would have that many at this point in the season. But and just again, he'll play in the NFL. You know, again, maybe not the biggest or fastest guy or linebacker that will play in the NFL or make a team, but just so smart. I mean, he's just in the right place at the right time. The reads he makes, the way he makes the defensive calls. I think it's a big miss. You know, we came out of last week's game really concerned and worried about Kelly Bryant and his availability, the quarterback of the offense, and it turns out he's going to be fine, but it's Cale Garrett, the leader of the defense, who's lost for the season. So I think it's a huge loss there in the middle of the defense. They'll probably start a kid named Cam Wilkins in his spot and a guy who's been starting at the linebacker role and I think will take even a greater role. Nick Bolton is somebody who also has an interception return for a touchdown, but very active, dynamic player out of the state of Texas. But I think he's a tough replacement. Again, I think, and I'm a big defensive guy and believer that you've got to have a good defense to really compete at a high level. I thought he was probably Missouri's best player last year, and certainly to this point this season. He's been the most productive guy in the field, not just defensively, but scoring touchdowns as well.
Talking about the unfortunate injury and loss of Cale Garrett, and you know, it's going to be interesting to see how the voting unfolds. Will he get any consideration and love on the All-SEC teams? You know, it seems like he should still be considered for
the season,
third team or something. But just to put it into perspective, he has 3 touchdowns. Yes, they're from the defensive point of view, but taking out throwing the ball, quarterback touchdown passes, taking that out, guys. Only 2 Missouri Tigers have more than 3 touchdowns this year on the offensive side. So amazing what he's done.
Defensive touchdowns just provide such a boost. And they're almost like 14 points, really, because the other team has the ball, and now you're scoring. And, I mean, it's you just can't even.
Yeah, I was almost going to say 21.
And he's so smart. I mean, the fumble, the really goofy play, remember South Carolina when the quarterback batted the ball backwards in the end zone? One guy ran to the football. One guy. It was Cale Garrett. He picked it up, and right away he was signaling touchdown. The other guys, even a particular sideline reporter, wasn't sure what the heck was going on. But Cale saw the football, went, picked it up, and was signaling touchdown like he knew all along what had happened. And then you go back and look at the tape of his touchdown interception last week in the victory over Troy. He totally read that play and disguised the look and just anticipated. I mean, he is so intelligent, and I think he still will be a big, big help to the defense. And I'm sure, you know, he'll be around the team and on the sideline. It can really help them in terms of a coaching type of person. But yeah, you know, it'd be hard to get postseason accolades because he's only made it through 5 games. But I'll tell you, Odom loves the kid. kid, and I think Barry Odom sees a lot of himself in him, and maybe even Kell to a higher level. Although Odom, in fairness, is still one of Missouri's top 10 all-time leading tacklers, ninth on the list coming into the season, and he hasn't played in 20 years. But, you know, Kell out of Kearney there near Kansas City wasn't heavily recruited. If he hadn't gone to Missouri, he'd gone to Navy and played football, and that doesn't surprise me. That's the type of kid he is, bright, hard-working. He fits that mold perfectly. But not heavily recruited, and yet he has been one of Missouri's most productive players in all the years I've been around, for sure.
Well, I love that we give him a lot of love, and I do think his distinction, when you talk about that South Carolina game, he not only ran over like a robot who was well taught to pick up the ball just in case, he knew this is a touchdown. I know what's going on here. That's a lateral. So that's what's incredible. It wasn't just, I'm going to do this because the coach taught me. He knew exactly what was going on. He's so smart. But you mentioned a guy who is going to be involved, and I mean heavily involved. We're talking to Chris Trevino of the Missouri Tiger Radio Network. And, Chris, I'm interested in your impression of Barry Odom, head coach. You know, we couldn't say what we thought about Gary Pinkle about after year two or three. It really needed a greater body of work to get our arms around Gary Pinkle. And I think the same thing with Barry Odom. It's not like a guy who hit with a giant flash. It's not a guy who's easily one that you look at as a disappointment. Just what do you think about Barry Odom, where he is in his coaching, where the Tigers are with him, how he's grown into this role? What do you see his attitude like, and how he leads this football team in a tough SEC?
Well, you know, I've known him since he played here, since he arrived in the mid-90s from Oklahoma, and I have seen him, you know, use the word accurately, grown into this role. I've seen him grown as a person, and he really is a guy of substance, is what I say. Just a solid person. He came in a very difficult time. I mean, not to bring all that stuff up again from 2015. I lived through it a little bit in terms of following it, covering it, but, you know, the player boycott and the campus, things were messy, and obviously campus leadership, top two officials lost their jobs. I mean, it was just turbulent times, and like I've never seen here it's been 36 years as a student since then here. And
that means you're 40 years old. You're at least 40, that
something
means.
Like that. Yeah. That's right. I was early into college.
Toddler.
The point hopefully is to give a little perspective as to how you know, bad it was for a few years, and even maybe worse than it was, the perception that got out, you know, around the country about Missouri and racial problems, and it you know, enrollment was down in the school. I mean, the student numbers were down drastically, let alone attendance. Remember, attendance from 2015 to 16 dropped by 13,000 a game. It was a 20% drop, the biggest in the country from one season to the next of any Power 5 school. So Odom inherited that, you know, and he was willing to roll up his sleeves and take the job. He wanted to be here. He played here. He'd been an assistant for many years. So he's been through a lot, and it's certainly his program now, and his stamp is on it, and he's running the program. He's not going to have the kids rise up and have issues like that. I really believe that he's got a good grip on the program with them, and I think he really has shown improvement. Now, this is his fourth year. You know, he started out 4-8. Last 2 years, of course, had winning seasons, 7 wins, 8 wins. Got to figure out the bowl game. They're 0-2 in bowl games, but those are a little bit different games anyway. But now, fellas, he's above the 500 mark as a coach for the first time in his fourth year. Now he's 23-20. Came into this year 19-19. They're 4-1. They've got a chance to, I think, rip off a few more wins here in a row before they get into November and have the likes of Georgia and Florida. But my point in all this is it's taken time. I think for most coaches, you expect it to take a little bit of time, especially in this job at that time. It was going to take whomever time just to win the kids and the fans back over and get Missouri really unified, and it is homecoming. We talked about they're expecting a big, big crowd today of about 60,000, which would be close to a sellout. Missouri's not had a sold-out football game since 2014, which is remarkable. 5 years, you know, that was the last year they won the SEC East in those two back-to-back SEC East years. So, been turbulent times, been a long way back, I think, relatively speaking. But I think he's in a good place. He wants to be here. You hear people say that, but he's one of about a dozen or so coaches in the country that our head football coaches at their alma mater, certainly in the Power 5. Another one is Matt Luke, the Ole Miss coach, who was an offensive lineman for the Rebels years ago and been a longtime assistant there. So they're both, you know, I think very similar in a way, the two head coaches. But Odom, I just think, really is feeling more and more comfortable as time goes on, as you would hope and expect, but obviously it's not always that way. Oftentimes coaches are gone by their fourth year on a job, but here he is only getting better, and the wins are starting to come more regularly, and I think fans really appreciate the hard work he's done to get to this point.
Big game today against Ole Miss. Danny, we've been building this game up a lot because of lack of games around here, but let me give you a little bit more of build-up for this game. A, importance, and B, opportunity to get over there and watch Mizzou. If you don't, if you have an open plan tonight, you might want to go join the 60,000 and get this thing closer to the sellout. Because do you realize today on October 12th, Mizzou is going to play at home and play homecoming games, the game against Mississippi. The next time they're going to play a home game is November 16th. Think about that. It's a long ways off. So you need to win this game, which leads me to my last question. Chris, it's so great to talk to you. What do you think the Tigers' record, I'm going to say you think they're going to win today. What do you think the Tigers' record is going to be when it's all said and done? And what's it take to be satisfying to Missouri fans? Because the number total could be pretty big this year.
It could be. I think they've got a real chance to have a good number. And it is interesting because these five home games in a row hasn't happened in this stadium's existence, and this stadium was built in the 1920s. And now, like you said, three in a row on the road after this, Vanderbilt, Kentucky, and Georgia with a bye week in there too. So it's a crazy schedule this year. But I think they've got a chance. I think the two games, obviously, they'll be underdogs in the rest of the way are Georgia and Florida. Georgia's on the road. That's going to be really tough. Would be for anybody in the country to go there and get a win. And then Florida, at least, is at home. And as we like to point out, in November. So November 16th, it could be cold here at Missouri. We could even have snow for all I know. I'll tell you what, it's going to be cold tonight when the sun goes down. So there's some wishful thinking. And Missouri's had success, as you guys both know, against Florida. It's been rather interesting. The Tigers have had the Gators number in recent years. They've had success against them in Columbia and in Gainesville. I've beaten them in Gainesville a couple of times. So one loss now. I guess I'll say they finish, and I'm only doing this because it's halfway through. I wouldn't be brave enough to predict before the year, but I think they can beat 9-3. I really do. I think those are, you know, two games which obviously figure on paper to be the toughest, but I'm not naive. I also know even though Kentucky's struggling, Missouri's lost four in a row to Kentucky. They play in Lexington, but this should be a year they get them. Kentucky's starting quarterback is out. They're 0-3 in the league. So, but I think 9-3, and that does not win you the SEC East. But I'll tell you what, if you finish 9-3 in this league, you'd probably be like the fourth, probably more like the fifth or sixth best team. And that's still a decent bowl because you think two maybe go to the playoff, at least one more go to one of the, bowl games, a New Year's Six, like a Sugar Bowl where the SEC is slotted in. So then you're talking Citrus Outback Gator. I mean, Missouri could very well at 9-3 if it gets their play in a New Year's Day bowl, if it's bowl eligible. And, of course, we're waiting on the NCAA to rule on Missouri's appeal of the one-year postseason ban. And I think we're going to hear that in the next 2 to 3 weeks. I think that's coming pretty soon. But they've got to be bowl eligible. But if they are, if they can get to 9 wins, that's a good bowl game for Missouri representing the SEC because the SEC is really top-heavy this year. You got Georgia, obviously Alabama, LSU, and Florida still unbeaten. Florida plays LSU tonight. You've got Auburn. I mean, Missouri, I think, is very well, best of the rest or next best. And you say, hey, let's fifth overall in the league maybe. But still, in this league with its bowl affiliations, they could play in a New Year's Day bowl game if the NCAA allows them in the first place.
So the next 3 weeks are probably the decision makers. Games that Missouri will be favored in is supposed to win. And then if they don't win those, that will probably cast a little bit of a disappointment on it. Chris, we always appreciate
that
your analysis. And enjoy the game tonight and put on another layer when the sun goes down, and you'll be all right.
And sorry we can't make it to your party at your house. I know it's a big homecoming party at your house. I'd love to be there, but we won't
if
make
I
it.
I knew you guys were coming. I'd throw a party. But I know I don't have.
I got a little volleyball. You know, I don't go to Manhattan very often, guys. It's just
no.
You know, this is a week off, hanging out here with Danny. Well, not so much. My daughter's volleyball game starts at 1, so I'm heading back to Manhattan again.
All right. See you later, Chris.
All right. Well, you wish Mackenzie Weber well. See you guys.
Thank you.
Chris Trevino of the Tiger Network and obviously a mainstay around Columbia, Missouri as the Tigers today play against Ole Miss.